There'll be a microphone going down each side of the room. If you'll raise your hand, it'll be passed in to you. If you choose to direct your question to any one of us up here, feel free to do it. I left out one thing I wanted to tell you about. When I was trying to figure out whether to do what we've done here today or not, I talked to Mike Wales over breakfast one morning. I said, Mike, if you were a golf club here in the desert and you were kind of antiquated in your payroll accounting system, maybe you didn't even have a time clock, what kind of savings could be accrued if you were to modernize that system, make it more technical? And he said, well, he said, the first thing that's difficult in that is that normally when a payroll is not automated, there's at least a half a person in accounting that may not be necessary. And so when you begin to automate and make those changes, you're somewhat positioning yourself to eliminate a half to a full employee. He said, if someone's willing to do the things they need to do, make the employment adjustment they need to make, he said, I believe they can save somewhere around 30% of their payroll. That was when I said to Mike, are you serious? He said, yeah, I am. I said, well, I've been wanting to do what we're doing here today for a good long time, and I invited Mike to come to Landmark's office and meet with Joe Gill and I. We met on Thursdays at 8:30 for about 6 months and talked through different things, different ideas, and this program here today. But that's what really just drove it home with me, was to think that there's still some clubs out there that are pretty antiquated, if you will, in their payroll procedures. And that's a big expense when you think about 30% of a club's payroll. So with that, let's open it up to questions, and appreciate you all being here.
Hi, Andy. Panel. Two things. One, a comment is that I sit on the board of directors of the Coachella Economic Partnership, and you know, that economic partnership concentrates on bringing new business in and trying to retain employers. And my personal opinion, being on the board, is that the golf industry is underrepresented, and I think it would be a great place for collectively, if you could, as a golf industry, have a membership there and participate in that organization. I would, for one, help create a golf course task force. But the economic partnership has got all the tools to improve the industry, you know, between incubators and expertise and banking and so forth. So I throw that out there. The second thing is a question is golf is going through the same thing that skiing went through in the 70s and tennis went through in the 80s. And what we need to do is find ways to retain and build, like you said, the customer base and the development themselves. I come from the development side. I'd like to know if anybody in the panel has an idea for creative ways country clubs and golf course facilities in general are expanding the use and recreational opportunities beyond just golf in their facilities, if there is such a thing.
Well, probably the primary area where they have expanded has been in health-related kinds of facilities. That are gyms, spas, workout facilities, but expanding in the area that attracts what I'm going to call the future and the fringe golfers is the area where we're weak, whether it's the children, whether it's the lady golfer, whether it's the senior golfer, and that's the portion that doesn't take a lot of capital outlay to make progress, but it just hasn't occurred.
Andy, if I could add to that, one of the things that I think is missing from the industry today. I'm going to go back to Landmark Land of 25 years ago in La Quinta. Landmark Land was part of the community in La Quinta. Every year they had Christmas parties. They had Halloween parties that they brought the community in general. It wasn't aimed at the members of their golf courses. It was aimed at the community. My daughter's 26 years old today. She remembers going to down to Landmark to La Quinta Country Club and going to some of those things. And I think if you want to build new members and everything, be part of the community. Don't just be the snobby guys at the golf course. Get in touch with the rest of the community, and I think that will bring those people in because they will see something good out of that that isn't just, you know, golf. So I suggest from somebody who's not in the industry at all, okay, is be part of the community, and I think you'll benefit from it in the long run.
One other idea that's actually being used out here, and again, it kind of flaunts tradition, excuse me, is the dress code. You have a golf course out here, the Plantation, which is men only, and they are right now very successful. They're doing very well with membership, and if you talk to them, and I don't know if anybody is here from the Plantation, but people I talk to from the club, they don't actually believe that their success relative to other clubs right now is due to the men only policy. It's because you can dress any way you want, and so they're attracting a lot of young members. You can play wearing flip-flops and shorts and a tank top. You can simply come as you want to, full use of the clubhouse, and do what you want to do. And they think that that informality is helping them attract a lot of young golfers who simply don't want to get up Saturday morning and have to get dressed as though, in a sense, they're going to work. And so, again, it goes against the grain. But if you want to attract younger golfers, one way to do it, perhaps, is to allow them to dress the way they generally dress.
Well, I don't know about this dressing thing now. I don't even know if he plays golf or not. But no, we're not going with flip-flops, as far as I'm concerned. The hell with that. I mean, no tank tops either. We're not going with that, unless it's a female. If it's a guy, he's not wearing a tank top. He mentioned the Plantation. It's very successful. Believe me, every member that's at the Plantation is a member someplace else because his wife's not going to let him go there because she can't go there. It's a men-only golf course. I belong to one of those at home. I belong to Preston Trails, and I was not going to join, but my wife said, that's where you belong. She said, you need to go there. But I'm at Royal Oaks, and I'm at the National, and my wife and I play a lot of golf with my wife. Now, I have a lot of fun. I caddy for her, to tell you the truth, because when she plays, I rake bunkers, and I rake bunkers, and I rake bunkers, and I tee the ball up for her. I do. But she's 20 years younger than I am. See, I don't want to lose her. But I do this. But the dress code, I think there's nothing wrong. They got tennis shoes now with cleats on them. I don't think there's anything wrong. I hate to see people on the golf course with sweats on and all this stuff. I'll tell you what we're going to have to do is this area is seasonal. For us to get new people in here and for them to play is sometimes during this season that you have here. You know, if you really look at it realistically, if you look at this area, it's like going to Augusta. You can go to Augusta in June and get a room for $37. You can go there during Masters Week and that room will cost you $400 and you got to take it 7 days. You can't take it for 1 or 2 days. What we're doing here, in my opinion, I came through here driving from Dallas, took my son's car to USC, drove nonstop, took me 19 and a half hours. I ended up right here on Cook Street at the Marriott Courtyard. I drove in. I says, I need a room. I was exhausted. $67. Now, I want you to go down there now and try to get you a room for $67. You can't get the broom closet in there for $67. I think what you've got to look at here, and I may be off base. I'm not on the dress, I can tell you that. I'm not off base there. But I may be off base. But sometimes during this season that you have here, we're going to have to go down to get new people in here. We're going to have to promote it. and we're going to have to want people to come in here. What I hear with people, and I hear it all the time, you know, they keep talking about the place. What's the place in South Carolina or North Carolina where they have all the golf courses? Myrtle Beach. Yeah, they got a lot of golf courses, and they spend like $300 a year maintaining them. I mean, they got zillions of golf courses, but they're not. It's not Palm Springs or Palm Desert. It's not here. These are beautiful. Those there, all Bermuda. They don't overseed. They dorm me in the winter. It's not. That's not. But you can go there and you can play reasonable, and that's why a lot of people go there. We're going to have to do something, and people tell me all the time. They said, "Love to go there, Lee, but there's no place I can play, you know, at these clubs for under $200 green fee during the season." And this is what we're talking about. I think if we're going to get new people in here, and these people that want to apply, we're going to have to take care of them somehow. They your season, you got 5 months, 6 months, you got to make hay, and we understand that. But now we're at a point to where we've got to do something about it. We're going to have to advertise. We're going to have to get with people, either the hotels, whatever, and to get people in here. Yeah, I couldn't get a room this week. When I called you, you couldn't get one either. And you live here. Hey. There you go, Bob.
Yeah. I just came back from the golf course owner show in Las Vegas. And one of the things that was a hot topic was identify these successful clubs. And a lot of them are bringing in full-time daycare people. So young women can come in and have even from babies, from like 6 months old, taken care of while they go work out and, you know, hang out with the gals and the guy, whatever, or play nine holes of golf or whatever. So that's one of the things that's a hot topic. The other thing that came up that's been in the past was maybe making golf something other than 18 holes, something less than that, like maybe three sixes. Designing these things with three sixes, you can play 12 holes of golf and call it a day. So those are the things that are coming up now. The other thing out here, especially, I don't know how you are on getting connected with the high school golfers to try to, you know, we all talk about wanting to get the young people growing the game and getting young people here, but nobody seems to want to get the young people out, you know, not in my course. But I think opening up to the high schoolers and really trying to promote it to that people and growing the game that way. So that's what I like to see.
I've got a couple of comments. I manage a course, 27 holes out in Cathedral City. Seems to me that if you're going to encourage more people to play, you need to make it so that they will. My particular course, we do not allow walkers, for example. But I know a lot of people that walk. When I managed a course up in the mountains, I walked nine holes every morning. And it was just a great experience. But we don't do that here because we're trying to put more people through. The other thing is, if you want to involve these homeowners into your courses, bear in mind it usually takes a vote from those folks. And if they represent 60% of the community, then you're going to have to determine what you're going to need to do to get that 60% of that vote. And they're going to have to see some value for that contribution. And the value for that contribution is not just being able to go down to the clubhouse and spending more money. The value is going to be some participation in golf, something to encourage them to the game, and something so that they're more than just a nominal social member but have some real access. So I think that the clubs need to consider that also.
The use of the club by homeowners associations could come in many forms. And I don't know that when I talk about getting the HOA and the homeowners involved that I'm necessarily saying that they need to become a golfer or be a golfer. Whether that's a social membership of some sort, a seasonal membership, whether there's a way to pre-sell them rounds of golf that they can use for their son-in-law or whoever else. So the HOA involvement is many things. And as I said a little bit earlier, that process to get the HOA interest where you want it to go to get that 60% vote may take 5 years. But you're not going to get it if you don't head that way and begin to work on it day in and day out at this point in time. And there's a story or two, and I won't mention names in the desert, but homeowners need to realize they could look up to no flags in the greens and brown grass. And that's not what they want. And so they need to be a part of helping that club determine what it is they're willing to pay a little money towards that benefits the facility.
Give that microphone to Barbara right there. Barbara Smith. Tell me a little story, Barbara.
Okay, I'm homeowners president at Jack Ivy Ranch Country Club. That's a 9-hole course regulation. About 3 years ago, our equity board of directors came to the homeowners board and said, we're going to have to throw in the towel. And you will either buy the course for a dollar or it will go brown. So we worked really hard for about 3 months, and it was a hard sale to tell each of our homeowners that it was going to take 25 additional dollars from them every month to support the golf course. It did pass overwhelmingly, and when we took over the course, there was no income. Fortunately, most of the bills were paid. There was no reserve. So 3 years later, the Homeowners Association has a success story. It may not seem like a lot, but that $25 a month generated $119,700 a year, and that has gone into our reserve. So it can be done, but you have to work together.
Thank you. I'd like to really address these remarks. First of all, I want to thank you very much for the program. My name is Bert Hoff, but I'm representing Tamarisk Country Club. And it's been enlightening for me to listen to you gentlemen explain the situation. And you've actually hit on every problem that we are having now at our club, as most of the other clubs are. Now, we're a private club as opposed to an operating club that's looking for making income. We're not looking to make income. We're looking to keep our members happy and keep them steady. So what I'm looking for is ideas how to retain membership and create new membership. And the one thing that struck me most here is, in my opinion, is that we're situated around 6 or 7 other clubs within almost walking distance of our club. And there's no reason that these 6 or 7 clubs shouldn't be joined together in some respect to open that membership. And it's something that's a hard sell. You're going to have to sell your board of directors. And when I go back to my board of directors and they're going to ask me to report on this particular meeting, I'm going to tell them about this and say, look, we should get a committee together. Get together with the Springs and with Mission Hills and with the Thunderbird people and say, look, why can't once a week or once a month or once a year, whatever it is, have a day when we can each share the club, have members come. It's an attraction for the members. So you got a prospective member say, look, you're not just joining Tamarisk. Hey, you could play Thunderbird. You could play Morningside once in a while. Now, this is something that we're going to have to go back to our boards, talk to our boards about, and convince them it's something they have to do. It's not going to be tomorrow, like you say. It's not going to be in a week. It's going to take a while because you got some old timers that they don't want to do that. They want that exclusivity. They like that. But it's not going to be that way. So I appreciate the efforts that you put in, and I hope that the people that are here will take that back to their boards and bring these things forward, right, and maybe something can develop on it. And thank you again.
Andy, I want to say thank you to you and all the panel for coming down and enlightening us with this.
One more question.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And I'm the executive director of the First Tee of the Coachella Valley, and I have been very blessed to have people like the Springs and that out of the 100-some-plus courses here help us, along with some other courses, to help grow the game. We can worry about growing the game just today because of the issues that we have with financials and all the other stuff, but we also need to grow the game for the long run. We do need to be more involved with our youth. Not only does it keep them off the streets, but it also teaches them a game that we all love and respect. So as these opportunities come during the season, we need to get the high school and the students, and most of my group are underprivileged, and they are from most of the East Valley. They are mostly Hispanic or young ladies that are coming into the game. We have 1,250, but it's incumbent upon all of us, if we want to grow the game, we've got to grow it not only from today, but for later on for the coming in. So we need to get more support from the community to get the golfers, the high schoolers, the middle schools, and the other people involved. The second thing is I'm also involved a little bit in the government, and I agree with Andy. I do think that we need to be involved more with the community in the civic areas because it is where we are. We are a very powerful group. We have all the resources. We have thousands of members throughout just not only the Coachella Valley, but through all of California, millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars worth of industry. But we have no representation at the highest levels or no representation at the civic levels in cities and counties where that's where the decisions are made when they're going to tax us, when they're going to raise our properties, when they're going to do other things to us like limit our water and stuff like that. We need to be more involved in the community and at the legislature. There's no other business in the industry, especially as powerful as we are, that has no representatives at the state level. When the dentists were going to get billed and things were going to change, the dentists got together, pooled their money together, and they became of it with Senator Bill Emerson, who now represents them at the state level to make sure that their interests are taken care of. So it's just food for thought. Thank you.
Yeah, my name's Eric Schmidt, and I've been a desert resident for 25 years in the golf maintenance end, so I have zero perspective on the golf revenue side and operations whatsoever. On the maintenance end, which is the expense side of the equation, of course, just some general comments. One, we got, I don't know if you know or not, there's two certified golf course superintendents in the Valley here that Glenn just spoke as one, and Jonas Conlon's another, past presidents of the local superintendents association. And they can vouch or comment on some of my comments, but on the expense side, obviously the golf maintenance is a huge component of the overall expense of the club. Again, can't speak for the clubhouse and those associated expenses, but if you look at the overall annualized budget, single largest expense will be labor, followed up by water and power. Okay, so now you got to go, okay, well, people, different comments have been about co-ops for buying fertilizer, chemicals, et cetera. In this valley, very few diseases, very few insects, as opposed to Florida, other parts. Not as big of a component as you might think on a totality budget analysis. So if you really try to drill down to find out where the low-hanging fruit is, it'll be labor, and it'll be water, i.e. power to get the water out of the ground. Water rates are going to be going up, as Robbins was saying. So to that degree, to me, an area that could be explored gets a little bit sensitive, and it's kind of some of Lee's comments with Myrtle Beach, et cetera. The overall cost annually for overseeding is huge. I mean, the seed plus or minus 100 grand just for the seed itself, a regulation golf course. That's going to be going up. The Oregon grass growers compete with the wheat market in that area. We know wheat's been 8, 10 bucks. It's going to go higher. So expect that to go faster than inflation. The grass seed bill is going to go up. The fertilizer to fertilize that, the water, the power, just for the cool season grass market of the winter. Bermuda grass, when it's dormant, yes, it's brown. That is a subjective personal perspective as opposed to a playability issue. I would agree. I think Glenn, I don't know, Jonas could comment. Putting surface has to be overseeded in order to, in the wintertime, to handle that kind of traffic in a small area. There are some issues agronomically with compaction, golf cart ends, high traffic areas, Bermuda grass establishment, et cetera, could suffer in the summer in some of those high traffic areas. But if a club came down, if their back was really against the wall, are we going to stay open? Are we going to do the tough love, sell it to somebody for a dollar? If I was operating a club, I would look at don't overseed. What makes overseeding not aesthetically presentable is weeds. So you can spray, eliminate poana, you can clean up all the grasses. Go look at the tennis garden in the middle of the winter. There's no overseeded turf at the tennis garden. Those fields are beautiful. When we get a frost, psh, brown. Well, the company I work for, consult with, we spray those. Even homogeneous, shortcut, hybrid Bermuda, 3/4 of an inch, inch tall, looks pretty damn nice. That won't affect playability, the way the ball sets. You can mow it as low as you want to go. Glenn and Jonas could comment from an agronomic perspective as well, but there's some places to look when it comes to course maintenance. Every superintendent should be able to tell you what everything costs relative to frequency and duration. So, for instance, say you do rake bunkers every day. What is the incremental benefit if you go to every other day? What if you, you know, it was talked about sharing and being cooperative with equipment. Pretty difficult to do with mowing equipment the way normal golf is played now, because you have to have the whole golf course prepped essentially in the first 2.5-3 hours of the day. Could it be, could you reduce your fleet of equipment substantially if the clubhouse were to say, you know, you can mow fairways in the afternoon on 1-9? Maybe, you know, push the play most to the 1-9. There's things you could do creatively there, but again, don't underestimate the knowledge and of your golf course superintendent, and because it's a huge expense item, challenge them to get creative. They can tell you and should be able to tell you what every contributing component it represents in the form of labor. It's not too difficult to say, that's 20 hours a week times some denominator, that's X amount. You tell me, is it worth this much to have, you know, bunkers done every day? What if you skipped a day? What if you didn't do collars and tees on this day? How much is that worth? Then put it back to the club and a board. It's worth it or it's not.
That's funny when you said don't underestimate your green superintendent. The first thing I did when I bought that golf course, I said, do we have a greens committee? And they said, yes, we do. I said, good. So I got the greens committee, and I said, let me ask y'all something. If you don't mow your own lawn, and you don't trim your own trees, and you don't fertilize your yard, you're off this greens committee. I said, because you don't know a damn thing about grass, so you shouldn't be here. So I'm the greens committee at my club. You know, that's what I did there.
Eric, I think a lot of what you said certainly triggers thoughts and gives people an awful lot to think about. The question I ask some people is, if you overseed with X number of pounds of ryegrass in the middle of the fairway, why do you do that 10 feet from a backyard over there? And I realize the irrigation system complicates where you put what weight or pounds per acre of seed. But there's a way to accomplish that, and it gets headed in the direction you're wanting to go. But in defense of golf course superintendents, I don't know any of them that are working for themselves.
I'm Sherman Gallus. I'm with on the board at Sun Lakes Country Club in Banning. Our water situation is a little bit different than here, where you have a pretty large aquifer of water. Our city is planning to add a third stage to the water treatment, which will give us non-potable water for irrigation at the golf course. And I went to one of their demonstration plants down in Corona, and I've been looking on the website, and there's an awful lot of information that says this water contains a lot of salts and other problems, that you shouldn't use it during the day for people to be exposed, and it does a lot of damage to the grasses. And I'm just wondering if there's any experience here in this area.
Well, there's a ton of experience here in this area. I don't know how many golf course superintendents are here that currently use recycled water on their courses. I've talked to a couple of them. They're here. So I think if you get a hold of the superintendents out here, they can give you all the background and the do's and don'ts, because it is different if you're using recycled water versus well water versus straight Colorado River water. There's all different management techniques that you have to use to irrigate. But we've got golf courses here in the valley that are using you know, all three different types of water, and some of them, some golf courses using all three on one golf course, and it can be done and it can be managed well, and it's something that, that people do need to look at.
I'd like to thank the gentleman up here with me that made today, I guess, what it has been. Lee, Bob, Irwin, Steve, thanks again. And we really do appreciate you all being here today. And I know several people in the room, but over the next few weeks or months, if there's some people that feel that a continuation of this type of communication would be worth the time and the effort, I'd appreciate hearing about it. I don't know whether it should be quarterly, annually, but I do think it's something that should continue, because one of the weaknesses we have in the desert is communication within the club and what gets outside of the club. And if a club isn't balanced with both of those, they're leaving something on the table. So again, thanks for everybody's time. We appreciate you being here. Lee, thank you.
Thank you. Good. That's good. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good year, and hopefully we'll meet in a couple of years and see how we're doing. Okay. You see this tree?